The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Tēnā koutou katoa no mai haramai ki Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's Food Podcast. Every fortnight we get together to talk about the cultural, social and political role of food in Aotearoa and break bread with some of the buzziest people in the local scene. Today, as always, I have the Spinoff's Food Editor, Alice Neville, in the house. Kia ora, Alice.
Kia ora, Simon.
This week, Sophie is so late, she hasn't even arrived, and she's on the phone halfway back from Hamilton, somewhere after Ngarawahia, where she's been at the Foodstuffs Expo Schlangen Chicken. Kia ora, Sophie.
Hi, Simon.
Did it feel How nostalgic to be back in the chicken game?
Do you know what? I got a text from my husband yesterday morning, and it said, "Go smash it today, babe. You know more about chicken than most people who
are
born for this."
Oh, wow. The absolute deep romance of marriage.
Yeah.
So how many servings of chicken did you get through?
We have been literally firing out samples at pace for 2 days. So 6,000 samples have gone out.
Wow.
And we did a variety of Kegel products, but lots of their new stuff in the freezer, which is actually really cool.
I'm very proud to have influenced you into promoting the Tegel Rangatiki Kariagi chicken range. So thank you for pushing my favourite frozen chicken product.
That's free range, right?
Free range.
Good.
Yeah, totally. But when you said that, I thought that sounds like a ridiculous thing. But over the last 2 weeks, because we've been sent a lot of product, the Rangatiki Korean fried chicken is the one that we were sampling, and we made like a little kimchi fried rice, and it had spring onion and sesame seed garnish, and we made little pickled cucumbers, and it was absolutely delish. That was our favourite one.
I'm proud of you. Keep pimping that product hard. I love it. So today we're going to be talking about the joy of cooking at home and how to feed a whole lot of people at once. And we're joined by extra special guest Polly Marcus of Miss Polly's Kitchen Instagram fame. Hi, Pol.
Hello.
Polly is also a good friend of Sophie and mine. She's a wonderful laugh.
One day we need to just ban you guys from having any more friends on the podcast.
Get more friends, Alice, and you can invite them on.
I have lots of friends.
Now we've had Ginny.
Yeah. I've got heaps more we can have. Just you wait.
But Polly's independently, deservedly a guest.
Yes, absolutely.
Today. She has 18,400 followers on
That's
her
quite
Instagram.
A lot.
How does it, you know, is it a burden being famous?
I'm not saying this. No, it's not.
It's very impressive.
The only thing I think that, I guess I only started it a year ago in lockdown, but is I'm terrible at spelling. I claim to be slightly dyslexic. I'm just not good at English in general. And I think I find that a burden that there's a lot of people looking at things and sending me notes saying, oh, you spelt that wrong, or oh, do you mean this, or where do you put the coriander because you missed it out.
You should hire me.
Have I slid into your DM for some grammatical correction?
No, which surprises me.
I do it quite a lot to people that I know because I'm like, come on, like lots of people are seeing that. I feel like I'm doing them a favour.
Good work, Soph.
Yeah, I did one the other day and it was meant to say, pat the prawns dry. Once they were defrosted, and it just said, pay your prawns.
Pay your prawns well, fairly.
Speaking of people showing up in your DMs, have you, as your follower count has grown, have you seen a rise in douchebags in the DMs?
There's been a couple of grubs, but nothing too outrageous.
Oh, good.
So Polly is also a brand new spin-off collaborator. She is working on us with a partnership with Freedom Farms, cooking up some stunning pork recipes. The first, a delicious pork loin with red curry sauce, is available on her Instagram page and thespinoff.co.nz. Speaking of our wonderful sponsor, it's an easy segue into thanking them. And it can also allow Polly to take off her sweater in this very warm studio. The podcast and all our food coverage on The Spinoff would not be possible without the support of Freedom Farms. They believe that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how that animal has been raised, and their pork, bacon and free-range eggs are delicious. So please go and buy them because that'll keep us doing this cool podcast. So Polly, what was the inspiration behind Miss Polly's Kitchen and why did you... You know, because it must be time consuming and feel like a lot of work sometimes. Like, why did you decide to take that on?
Well, I feel like I hate saying lockdown, but in that first lockdown, so I'm a real estate agent. That's my job, and obviously that came to a crashing halt in April last year. So
not lots of people signing commercial leases.
No, they were just pulling out, like, we don't need an office. I was like, cool. Been working with you for a year. That's cool. So I was at home, obviously, a lot. Felix was upstairs working away, quite stressed. And I have realised that I need to see people in general. So I was going to the supermarket every single day just so I could have that human interaction. And then it was actually Nick from Everybody Eats who... I had a food page called Miss Polly's Kitchen that I'd started to post recipes for my family. And just because I always ask for inspiration. But I'd never really done anything with it. And he was doing a recipe for Everybody Eats and asked if I would do something for them, and that's sort of how it kind of took off, me talking to a camera, which I felt really awkward about, and then I did that and thought, oh, it's not that hard, and it sort of just started from there.
How long?
Paul, it was actually just before lockdown, saying to you, hey, this could be your opportunity to do your food.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it, and you were so self-deprecating. You were like, I've got this silly account that no one needs to follow, it's just for my friends, and I was like, it's actually awesome, you should totally share it wide, far and wide.
Yeah, well, I think it was a case of always thinking, oh, no, I'm too busy, I don't have time. But then I started doing that every day and then I loved it and now it has just become part of my daily life.
Routine.
Which is also, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it is a lot of work. It's becoming more work, I guess, as it grows because you're working with brands and, you know, but you've also got a full-time job so you have to sort of juggle everything. I don't have children so I've got that on my side that I'm not juggling that as well.
What is it though? What is the difference about Miss Polly's Kitchen? What do you think has made it so popular? And because I see so often when you share a recipe, 2 weeks later people are sending in the photos. People use your Instagram page like a cookbook. It's a really functional, helpful food Instagram.
Yeah, I guess. I do have to make a website. That's something I need to do because I have a lot of my mum's friends in that age group finding it quite difficult to follow, which is fair enough.
And we've got Odette being a bit noisy in the car.
Odette in the background, but that's all right.
Pipe down, love. Sorry, carry on, Polly.
I guess it's popular because I would hope that the recipes aren't too difficult, but I think that you're following them because you're interested in food. So if you were new to cooking, you probably would find a little bit of it or some of the ingredients a little bit overwhelming. And, you know, I've had friends say, you know, they'd never heard of or dukkha, and you know, things like that. And so, but I guess once you realise you can get that from the supermarket and it's actually really accessible and it tastes good. So I think it's probably popular because it's, and it's also relatively on the healthy side, which I think a lot of people are conscious of.
Flavour not, first.
Yeah, I think your weeknight meals are quite light.
Yeah. Yeah, flavour first. But and then that's, yeah, I mean, there's always a lot of ingredients because I feel like, you know, you have to use a lot of herbs and lemon zest and garlic and ginger and all of those things to make food taste good.
So I just think that while they are like relatively advanced, they're not hard.
No.
If you concentrate and do what you say, it's they're really easy to put together. It's almost different to like a tough Ottolenghi recipe
or something.
And you can get everything from New World or Faro.
Yeah.
And I think
it's
that's
quite
part of it.
Generous. Yeah, I think there's Holly cooks with a lot of herbs and she cooks with a lot of chili, and I think that if people are going to go to the effort to make dinner, they want it to be memorable, and I think those are the things that anyone that knows cooking uses a lot of. So it's awesome. She just like decapitates about 4 bushes of basil every time she makes something.
That's good. We need to use more herbs, in my opinion.
It changes the hot. It can elevate an entire meal, and it can make something quite good.
Even a salad, like when someone makes a salad, I'm like, just add some herbs to it. It'll change it.
Fucking nightmare if you can grow them. That's when it's easy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're buying a million little bloody plastic packets at the supermarket.
Yeah, I think.
Or if you can go to a market or greengrocer or something regularly.
Do you grow your own herbs?
I've got a few in the garden, but I go through it like so often. I've actually got a friend of mine gave me a whole lot of basil plants, and they're wild, so I use a lot of that. But even still, I still buy basil by the pot.
It's harder. You do need to have so much herbs in your garden to keep them functional.
Yeah.
Or else it's just sort of window dressing.
Yeah.
I almost feel like the best way to utilize small urban gardens is to either grow tomatoes, because you can get so much from such little space, or just grow only herbs.
Yeah.
There's no point having a little bit of radishes, a little bit of carrots, like some mini leeks.
Yeah.
Just go all in on herbs.
Yeah, no, I agree.
My mum does that well. Have you always loved cooking? Is that something you grew up doing?
Always. Well, I've always loved food. My dad, when we were really, really young, like, I don't know, 5 or 6, he had quite an extravagant palate, well, you know, which made us, for our age, like, we used to have scrambled eggs with cream and smoked salmon and dill for breakfast, to the point that my sister actually was put off eggs for about 10 years. But, like, you know, when sushi wasn't a thing, there was no Simpies or anything, that we were eating that. So he really got me into the food side.
Have you ever had gout?
No. Actually, once. I think I gave myself instant gout. I was at a work function at Oyster and Chop, and they had an oyster bar. And I honestly think I had about 3, maybe 4 dozen oysters, and then I had to sit down and basically under the top of my pants, and I was sweating. I was like, I think I've got gout.
The toe just starts. I think it's a good measure if you're allowed to be a guest on the podcast or not, if you have to have had gout. The thing I really admire about your cooking skill, Paul, is your ability to cook for sort of 10 to 30 people without stressing out, without looking like you're stressed out, which is an art in itself. What would be your biggest tip for helping people who are potentially cooking for a large group for the first time?
I think, well, being prepared and like having things organised before people come. So things like, you know, top all your ingredients, make a salad, don't dress it, put it in the fridge. Have and make dishes that, you know, like in winter, slow cooked meals, amazing. Do a slow cooked lamb shoulder. You can have roast vegetables and, you know, you can have a salad with that, or seasonal vegetables. And that's not difficult and it's impressive. I think my go-to is always, like, pastas. They go a long way and they don't have to be difficult. And everyone, well, most people love pasta. And then just having a couple of big salads. But I think mostly it's just being prepared. And also, you're the only one that knows if something's running behind schedule or if you've stuffed up this. And no one else is aware of it. So there's just no point in worrying But I definitely, I know that a lot of my friends, the issue is the timing of having, you've got this in the oven, but then you've got that cooking, and how the hell do you get it all together at the same time? I use a lot of tin foil to keep things warm.
As long as it's not glad
at. Do you think also it's quite good when you're cooking for a group, like, just make the whole portion? Like, this whole thing where people halve a recipe, I just don't,
I don't see much
value in that.
You may as well make the whole lot, and then people can take it for lunch the next day, or someone can pop it in the freezer and have it for a meal in the future. It just, like, creates a lot of waste, and I think it creates more stress. So I think people should just, if you're making something, then just, and you've got six people, then double the recipe, and you'll have eight portions, and you can pop them in the freezer for later.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I don't know why people try and half. Like,
I make the whole recipe when it's just me eating. It's like, oh, it serves four, serves me.
I've never halved a recipe in my life.
Yeah. That's a really interesting topic, I think, Alice, because when Millie goes away and I'm cooking for myself, I can't be fucked. I don't know what it is. I love cooking, but I think I love cooking for others more than myself. What does your nightly routine look like if you're at home on your own?
Really depends. I go through phases where I am really into cooking and I cook lots of interesting stuff just for myself. And then I go through phases where I really can't be fucked. Like, right now I'm in a bit of a cooking rut.
Like a not cooking?
Yeah, not cooking. Like, well, no, I still cook. I always cook. If unless I'm don't, but you know, if I'm not going out, or I very occasionally get takeaways, but not very often. I always cook myself something, like pasta. Big fan of pasta, or like a little stir fry or something. But
so you've been known to have three or four or eight beers before dinner time.
Yeah, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that good or bad for your inspiration?
Sometimes it's good for my inspiration if I'm just cooking for myself. Sometimes I get quite creative and I'm like, shit, yeah, fusion. I'm just going to throw this in and this in. And also because I really like using up what I have. So sometimes I would get quite out the gate, you know, with my cooking. But if I'm cooking for other people, I'm more nervous and I don't want to just try things. So then I think the eight beers can be problematic, and I just get like, and I'm like, oh, no, it's just not, don't worry about it. Let's just get takeaways. So yeah, it goes both ways. I wouldn't recommend, maybe like two drinks, quite good for creativity. Eight, bit far.
Yeah. What's the biggest fuck up?
I've noticed lately that that I think if you plan a little bit in advance and then cook for yourself and cook what you think other people will enjoy, and use up what's in the pantry, it's actually quite satisfying. I've almost got this new thing where I get excited by frugal things. You know, like, I've got this one tin of beans that's been there forever and it's driving me mad. Then I want to put it in dinner and then it's gone and I feel great and I haven't had to go out and buy something too.
Oh, I definitely have that, yeah. I get real satisfaction out of it.
I'm really worried you're turning into David, Sophie.
That's Sophie's husband. Is he famously
quite
frugal?
Like David, aren't I?
David is both famously frugal and famously like, Sophie will make a delicious carbonara or something and David will be like, oh my God, the Fijoa relish from 3 weeks ago is going to be perfect in this,
oh,
and stir it through his own portion. And it just, it makes no sense.
He'll happily sabotage today's meal in favour of not throwing away something from yesterday by mixing the two together.
I mean, I quite admire that, the spirit of that.
Speaking of home cooking, David's one of those people where, say you have a salad, some roast veggies, and some protein, he will ensure that every forkful has a bit of everything in it.
Oh, that's quite
interesting. And if there's like a parsnip, a courgette, a salad, and steak, every bit of the, you know, every single bit of the meal will be on every mouthful.
Oh, yeah. I quite like that.
Do you save the best mouthful till last?
I smoke my protein straight away. I want my steak when it's like there and hot and at its most delicious, and then I'll eat the admin afterwards. A lot of people I know eat the admin first and then enjoy the best part.
I think I mostly eat bowl food, you know, like things all mixed together, rather than, because I don't eat meat, I don't often have like. But if I am eating, like, at my parents' and I have, like, fish, potatoes, salad, I don't know. No, I think I mix it up. But not enough to be, like, a small bit of each on every fork. That's a waste of time.
Have you ever had a gigantic kitchen disaster with lots of people waiting to be fed?
Yeah. When I was so I worked on super yachts for a couple of years, and I'm not a formally trained chef at all, and I went for my job interview, and there'd been three chefs before me, and the head chef had said to me, what do you want to cook? I was like, salmon, and I knew I had that. I was like, yeah, I've got this. Dad's recipe is good. It's going to be great. Got on the boat that day, and she was like, look, the lady yesterday actually cooked salmon, so we've got some duck breasts. And I was like, oh God, what am I going to do? And I was like trying to Google things, but like Googling when you're in Spain, it just doesn't come up with the same sort of like help that you need. I don't know what the algorithms are like over there. Anyway, I thought that duck was like chicken and it had to be cooked all the way through. So I'm kind of pretending that I know how to use these steamer ovens. And I'm like, yeah, I've got them. This is good. I'll just do an Asian style duck. And I was like also Googling how to score it. So I was like, what am I doing? And then, yeah, got to that part, seared it, and then put it in the oven. I think it was on 180 for 40 minutes.
Oh,
which
my goodness.
I later learned you can probably get away with 12 minutes. and anyway, as I was slicing it, I was like, oh my God, I basically had tears in my eyes because I really wanted a job on this boat, and there was 15 people downstairs waiting to eat. And it was an absolute disaster. And Felix was on the boat at the time, and he was like, they were trying to eat it, and the boys were trying to be really complimentary. And like, you basically, it was inedible. Like, they were chewing
just
it.
Like, so dry. Just like a brown ice hockey puck.
It was revolting.
Did you get the job?
I did.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I made a really nice raspberry brownie.
Inside down with the coffee.
And so
Well, I think that's myself. Also a big part of you, and I'm sorry to use this word, your brand, is you're incredibly charming, Polly. I love the vibe that you present on Instagram. It makes food feel really fun. And I think the fact that you cooked a duck breast for 45 minutes and still got the job is a real testimony to that. And I really love it. I think people can be overwhelmed by the kitchen and be afraid of cooking. And you kind of break that down by the little intros and the way you make it seem exciting again. I call you the Nigella of New Zealand.
I thought you called Sophie the Nigella of New Zealand.
She's the Beyonce of New Zealand.
Oh, that's right, because of the salt, salt in the handbag. Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
Got hot sauce in my bag, yeah. Swag. but you have that same pure joy for food, I think, that Nigella does, and I don't know, it makes it really seem really fun. Do you think that comes from it being, you know, a part of your dad that taught you so much about food?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit of a pig. Like, yeah. I just love eating. Like,
it's a really good place to start being good at cooking is to love eating.
Well, yeah, I just get such a kick out of when you make something that's good and you're like, God damn, that's good.
Well, that's just relatable, isn't it, for people who are kind of like, I don't know, I don't know much about cooking, but I fucking love food.
Yeah. I feel like in the last, I don't know, I guess it's probably is 15, 20 years, there has been such a change with home cooking. Like, my mum wasn't the best cook when we were growing up, but then now she's evolved and she's amazing and she loves cooking, whereas when we were at school, she was like, oh, like, we used to have this the same pasta every week. So peppers, eggplant, tomato sauce, spaghetti, that was it. And I was like, if I have to look at that pasta ever again. But now, I mean, if she made it now, I'd love it.
Because that sounds
quite good. Yeah.
Yeah, but not everywhere.
I don't think we had pasta at all growing up.
I had a woman who looked after me after school one day a week, and she made mince with no like onions or garlic or tomato sauce or anything, just like turned red mince brown in a frying pan and then just cooked broccoli for about 15 minutes in boiling water, and I had to eat that once a week.
Oh, and it was yellow.
Oh, it was horrific.
Yeah.
And I just don't remember, maybe I was 7 and I didn't know how to say, like, Mum, this lovely
this
lady
is, not okay.
is just not okay in the kitchen.
We used to get, speaking of Tegel, we used to have chicken nuggets probably once a week, and I used to take the skin off it, put that aside, and eat the chicken nuggets, and then save the skin to the end to dip it in plum sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
We made these things at the show this weekend that were basically like, they're called boneless wingers, but it's basically a nugget that's molded into the shape of a chicken wing, and then they come with like barbecue sauce or honey and maple sauce, but it's supposed to be like game night food. And you can feel the adult eating them being like, yum, you can finally eat nuggets and it's legit as an adult.
The fact they shape them into wings is kind of creepy.
When I was living in Paris, looking after a little boy, he was, you know, a typical 7-year-old and loved nuggets, and I'd make him his 6, and I'd cook 6 for me, and I'd put them in the pockets of my coat that was hanging at the front door, and take them home to share with Millie. Like, we were so, so poor. Those nuggets kept us alive.
Were they called chicken nugget? Because you're in France.
I think they had a. Alice speaks a little bit of, or, you know, more than a little bit of French. Can you think of the French word for nugget?
I don't know. I don't know the French word for nugget. Nugget de poulet, perhaps.
We're coming close to the end. Polly has a very important meeting. But I wanted to ask her if you were to recommend a sort of early autumn recipe for the people cooking for, say, 10, something easy, you know, that's going to make the crowd happy, what would you go with?
Okay. I made it the other day for 7. It is. Actually, this was inspired by Sophie when she sent me the harissa paste from Fatima's, and it is a slow-cooked lamb shoulder, harissa lamb shoulder. And it's got like a harissa orange glaze and chilli, and it is outstanding. And then I would do some, if you were worried about the timing side, I would do boiled potatoes rather than roasted potatoes. No, I still do roasted potatoes. And then I served that with a big salad, and I could not recommend that more.
That'd be a crowd pleaser.
And actually some sort of nice sourdough to go on the side, just to mop the sauce up.
Double carbs, I like that.
Yeah.
And The one thing I wanted to go out on is, because we used the info in the recipe with Freedom Farms, how do we keep our pork sort of loin steaks juicy?
Don't overcook them.
Treat it like a beautiful piece of steak, right?
Yeah. People need to learn more about pork because it's so enjoyable when it's juicy, especially a pork loin. That pork loin red curry situation is a good time.
I had a really stunning piece of pork at Mr. Morris on Saturday night. Millie and I were gifted a night away from the children. We went on a staycation downtown, and Mother's Day, Millie didn't have to do any mothering. But that restaurant, as Sophie has talked about before, is absolutely stunning. And the pork with pineapple sauce, oh.
Yeah, that's the hero.
So it tastes like fatty incredible, and
doesn't
it?
Burnt. What cut?
It's the collar.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, and what's really amazing about Mr. Morris.
Pineapple reduction.
What's really amazing about Mr. Morris is the barbecue, the way they use fire and smoke. And they have the most incredible extractor fan going the whole time. But in the morning, I smelled my T-shirt and it had been like I'd been at a barbecue of the boys, you know, like standing around the sausages for 2 hours. And that type of cooking makes such a big difference. So shout out to juicy, medium rare pork.
Delicious.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us, Sophie. I want you here on time next episode.
Nice to chat to you too.
Oh. Thank you, Alice. And also we've got Alice on the ones and twos, producing in replacement of Tina today.
It's a different Alice. I'm not doing everything.
I always freak out every time I have to say Alice's surname because we always fuck it up. I'm going to go with Webb Liddell.
Nailed it.
Yeah, got it. Jane Yee is in charge of the Spinoffs Podcast Network. We've got Haz Beats on the beats as we disappear. Like, share, subscribe, and go and follow Miss Polly's Kitchen and get into her DMs.
God.
But be polite.
Thanks, guys.
Kia ora.
Bye.
Ka kite.
Hello for Lover, I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi,
Gyahe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.